Penguin Random House Audio presents Surfacing by Kathleen Janey. Read for you by Kathleen McCarran. The Reindeer Cave. You're sheltering in a cave, thinking about the Ice Age. From the cave mouth, a West Highland landscape in spring, in the early Anthropocene. On the hillside opposite, six red deer have bedded down in the heather. It's raining. A soft Highland rain. A smur. Not half an hour ago, you were walking beside the burn in a narrow ravine further up the glen. You heard something, glanced up to see a large rock bounce then plummet into the burn 25 yards in front of you. The echo faded, but your heart was still hammering as you backed away. They call these caves the bone caves because of all the animal bones found buried inside, animals long extinct in this country. You're in Reindeer Cave where antlers rather than bones were discovered. An excavation in the 1920s produced hundreds of reindeer antlers, almost all from females. You sit at the cave mouth, looking out at the rain, thinking about the Ice Age. You realise you haven't a clue. We can wait, say the hills. Take your time. The ice came and went, is that right? Ice covered the land and froze the sea for thousands of years, but now and again, every 100,000 years or so, came milder spells when the ice retreated. Tundra formed on the land and reindeer wandered in. Glaciers in the glens, or what became the glens. To reach the caves, you climbed a grassy slope 150 feet above the river. You try to imagine stepping from the cave mouth onto ice and moraine. Some years ago, cave divers entered into this same hill by an entrance higher on the moor, by the back door, so to speak, intending to explore a system below the bone caves. It makes you quail, the thought of crawling through darkness and passageways and underground streams, echoes and falling rocks. Deep within, the cavers found the bones of a bear. What was that like? Like reaching the memory of the hill itself. Eventually, carefully, the bones were brought to the surface. In time, they were carbon dated. They were 45,000 years old. A long sleep, even for a bear. 16 million days and nights had passed in the upper world. Long enough for the ice to return, then yield again, then return in one last snap, then leave for good, or at least for now. The cave mouth the bear must have used has since been blocked by the rocky detritus of that last ice grip, the one which ended 10,000 years ago and created the land we know. 10,000 years. In the great scheme of things, we're living through a warm bank holiday weekend. Warm and getting warmer. As to the antlers, they were found before carbon dating became available. Then, excited speculation concerned us, people, humans. Might there have been Paleolithic humans here to gather up all those antlers and store them in a cave? But there's no evidence for that. Female reindeer, caribou, shed their antlers naturally up on the calving grounds, and some antlers must have fallen onto the glacier to be borne downhill and swilled into the cave mouth by meltwater and duly buried. That's the surmise. The hoard of antlers is kept in the store of the National Museum of Scotland. They're not as you might imagine, not majestic. Ancient fragments, they look more like broken biscuits. Also in the store, wrapped in a box, are the bear bones, including the brown stained skull. The skull was in the cave, and what was in the skull? Bear mind. Bear memory. When autumn came and the nights began to freeze, he remembered where the cave mouth was, so so he padded across the glacier. Also stored away are the remains of other creatures of the caves. Lynx, for example. Even the tiny bones of lemmings, saved for the nation in an old Cadbury's chocolate tin. The world warms. Last winter was the wettest. No snow or ice to speak of. A flash of blue sky was rare as a comet. The nights were starless and lachrymose. The TV news showed floods and sandbags, householders weeping as they cleared the sodden mess. There were arguments about land management, floodplains, deforestation. Commentators intoned, "Is it climate change?" Well, you thought sourly, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. D'où venons-nous? Que sommes-nous? Où allons-nous? At your cave mouth, you wonder if the ice will ever return, a natural cycle, or if we've gone too far with our Anthropocene. But who can answer that? We just can't grasp the scale of our species' effects. But the single falling stone which could smash our brains out, that we understand. Now the rain's easing, and a small scruffy terrier appears at the cave mouth. Following the dog come children. Their voices carry from down the slope. "Daddy, look, the caves." A reflection. On a train heading north. We crossed the Firth of Tay and stopped at the port city of Dundee, where the ship that took Scott to the Antarctic is berthed and where oil rigs go to be repaired. Now we were out in the Angus countryside. Eastward, on the right, lay the North Sea, but I was seated on the landward side where the view was of wintry fields. The sea on one side, fields on the other. I'd been daydreaming, but came to my senses to notice that a shining spread of sea had appeared in my window, superimposed over the fields of brown earth. Then it vanished. A moment later it flashed back again, a stretch of sea, silvery over the land, but only for a few seconds. By now I was sitting up, interested in this phenomenon. The fields on the left gave way to pine woods, the train tilted a little and, yes, the sea's reflection flashed on again, this time above the trees. If I narrowed my eyes, I could see both sea and trees at once. And now there was a ship. A ghostly tanker was sailing over the pine trees. There's an old ballad, isn't there? The False Bride. How many strawberries grow in the salt sea? How many ships sail in the forest? A woman nearby was on her mobile, loud and getting louder. "It's just so stupid. That's 3 times I've emailed her. They'll just have to." I watched the sea's reflection come and go until the train entered a cutting. When we emerged, the sea was gone. There were fields on the right, and from my side, the left, the distant Grampian hills with a dusting of fresh snow. "I told her, I did, I told her." The woman was still on her mobile. Her fellow passengers were glancing at each other, rolling their eyes. There was the False Bride, but the ship in the sky had caused something else to surface in my mind. It was an account William Scoresby had written. Scoresby was a whaling captain and the son of a whaling captain. He had sailed north with his father every summer since he was 12, and at the age of just 21, took command of his own ship, the Baffin. But slaughtering whales was a chore. Scoresby was much more interested in science and discovery. As he sailed north in 1822, he made maps and observations and detailed the strange Arctic phenomena he encountered off the eastern shores of Greenland. He wrote about snowflakes, refractions, rainbows, and mirages. On one July day, a beautifully fine one when the winds were light and the atmosphere highly refractive, Scoresby and his crew witnessed a marvel. 2 ships appeared, sailing upside down in the sky. He recognized.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?